The Brazilian government and private sector are collaborating with Japan and the government of Mozambique to push a large-scale agribusiness project in northern Mozambique. The project, called Pro Savanna, will make 14 million hectares of land available to Brazilian agribusiness companies for the production of soybeans, maize, and other commodity crops that will be exported by Japanese multinationals. This area of Mozambique, known as the Nacala Corridor, is home to millions of farming families who are at risk of losing their lands in the process. My name is Feroz Manji, and I'm talking today with Devlin Kuyek from Grain. Grain is a small international non-profit organization that works to support small farmers and social movements in their struggle for community-controlled and biodiversity-based food systems. As many of you will know, Grain won the Right Livelihood Award in 2011. The Right Livelihood Award is the alternative Nobel Prize. Welcome to the show, Devlin. There's been a lot of publicity coming out recently about a project called Project Savanna, Pro Savanna. And it's grabbed a lot of people's attention because it's been presented as a sort of South-South cooperation. You have Brazil, Mozambique, and Japan involved in what sounds, at first glance, like a major development program. Isn't this something we should be encouraging?
Well, yeah, that's how they're selling it. The reason it's called Pro Savanna is it's actually supposed to be modeled off a similar project that happened in Brazil, in the Cerrado. And the idea there was that to develop the Cerrado area, this big savanna area in Brazil, into a center for the production of agricultural commodities. And Japan at that time, in the 70s and 80s, invested heavily in the development of the Cerrado area in Brazil. And within a few years, you had about 60% of this enormous savanna area taken over for the production of soybeans, of maize, of cotton, of sugarcane. Of course, there was a low population density in that particular area of Brazil, but it was devastating for the indigenous peoples, and of course, who have been very marginalized now into these sort of reserve areas in the Cerrado, and who continue to fight for their lands and are involved in all kinds of land issues. Anyways, that's a bit of a side story, because what's happened now since the food crisis of 2007-2008 is countries like Japan, who are very import-dependent on their food, realized that it was very problematic to be so dependent on the global market because of the increase in food prices that we saw in 2008, the control of global food commodities by a few corporations, mainly based in northern countries. And so they have since tried to encourage their own corporations to go overseas and to outsource food production, control it. One of those areas that they have been targeting is Africa. It's not just Japan, of course, it's other countries. And so it's global corporations as well. I mean, not to say that this is just a food security issue. There's lots of businesses that are interested in developing agriculture in Africa, because they see enormous potential in making profit by turning Africa into a similar sort of situation as what happened in the Brazilian Cerrado and the Savannah area. And what they say is that Mozambique, and you'll see all kinds of maps that will show how this part of Mozambique, it's the northern part of Mozambique, lines up sort of perfectly in terms of latitude with the Brazilian Cerrado. They talk about the conditions being very similar. Of course, one of the big differences is that this part of Mozambique has millions and millions of people. It's the most densely populated part of the country. It is not just an open savanna with indigenous people practicing hunting and gathering. This is an area where people are already farming. And if you go into that area, you'll see it's densely populated with small family farms. It's a very fertile land. It has very good climatic conditions. So the goal here is really not to, say, develop agriculture on lands that are not already under agricultural production, but to change the model of farming and to change the whole orientation of what agriculture serves in that area, to integrate it into these global chains of production. So the real basics of the Pro Savanna program is that, you know, it's a tripartite agreement. So there's Mozambique, Brazil, and Japan. Mozambique supplies the land. Well, the government supplies the land, right? It makes land available for this project. And they're talking about 14 million hectares of land, right? 14 million hectares of land.
Sold off at a nominal price.
What we've heard and what has been confirmed, I mean, I can tell you more about this as we go along, but what was confirmed to us was that it would be at $1 a hectare. Okay. So Mozambique has to make that land available. Brazil is essentially there as the main partner to do the farming. So they have, you know, the agribusiness companies, the large-scale farmers in Brazil who have this kind of experience. I mean, some of these companies, and you can say farmers or you can say companies. I mean, SLC Agricola, which is one of the largest farmers in the Cerrado area of Brazil, farms about 230,000 hectares. And that's far larger than I think there any Canadian farm, for instance. These are the types that are coming over to Mozambique to start farming projects there, to start farming soybeans, maize, cotton, potentially sugarcane, sesame, crops for export. Japan will be, it's the Japanese corporations, which are the big trading houses, like Mitsui, Itochu, Marubeni. These companies are coming to invest in the ports and in the infrastructure to take that production away, so to export it mainly to Asia. And it won't just be Japan, it'll be China, it can be the Middle East markets, it can be the European markets, but they'll be the ones who do the trading. So you have Mozambique supplies the land, Brazil does the farming, and Japan gets the food.
Wow.
And that's what it looks like overall. Now, there have been various details emerging about this for a couple of years now. There was a report in the Financial Times, in Valor Economico, in some of the local dailies even in Mozambique, giving little snippets here and there of what was being implied. Because you would have these delegations of Brazilian farmers who were coming into Mozambique, and they would talk a little bit about why they were there and what was being offered, and they'd try to go back home and sort of sell the project on to others. So through that, you could get bits and pieces of information of what was being planned. We knew that there was this project called the Nacala Corridor, and essentially there's two main ports in Mozambique. So you have the Beira port and you have the Nacala port. And the Beira port is not a deep sea port, but it is the shortest line to a major coal mine. It's a recently developed coal mine. It's the second largest deposit of hard coking coal in the world. And Vale, a Brazilian corporation, is doing the main mining of that coal. And for the initial production, they're going to be shipping it through the Beira port. But because it's not a deep sea port, they want to develop the Nacala port as a source of exports for the coal. And so they'll be constructing a second rail line going to Nacala from Tete province, which is where the coal is, so in the interior of Mozambique.
Is that the same line that goes on to Malawi?
Yes, and then and eventually the whole line will go to Malawi, to Zambia, so that corridor will extend to other countries. And it's that corridor which forms the core of the Pro-Savannah project. So you would have this rail infrastructure set up for the transportation of coal, which will also be used now for the transportation of grain and oilseed crops. And that's also alongside that area is where most of the farms will be established, of course.
So it's like a catheter into the land.
Yeah, right into the interior of Africa, into the interior of this very fertile area. And again, there is a rail line that's existing. It's not in very good shape, but there's a rail line that's there. And on either side of that rail line, that is one of the most densely populated parts. That's where the agriculture is the best. That's where people have set up along these sides of these roads and, you know, getting some access to markets. Now, if you talk to any of the proponents of this project, they give you a very different picture of what's going on. When we started investigating this project in spring, so May, June of 2012, I had some conversations with JV Agro, which is a Brazilian kind of semi-public-private foundation that does consulting services and has been tasked with leading much of this project from the Brazilian side, especially when it comes to getting the finance for it and getting the private sector interested. They told me straight out, well, these are abandoned lands. The project will take place on, you know, areas where there are no people farming and that there would be no social impacts imaginable from this kind of scale of agriculture in the area because there's so much land available in Mozambique. And even the government talks about having 35 million hectares of land available in the country. You look at the World Bank, you look at others who are talking about Mozambique. They talk about it as if this country full of unused agricultural land. So one of the first things that we did when we were investigating the project after that was to then try to, you know, okay, we have the promoters saying this, the investors saying this, and now what's the actual situation? And one of the first people I met with was a researcher at the National Research Institute who works on land issues and who had recently done a full survey of the availability of land in the country using satellite imagery, using the most up-to-date technologies that they had. And if you look at the maps from that, what they came up with, you'd see that there's actually nowhere near the 35 million hectares of land that are available for agricultural production in the country. It's probably closer to 6 million hectares, and that's in the whole country. In the Nacala corridor, in that area where the ProSavanna project is supposed to take place, there's almost nothing available. There's these tiny little green spots that you can see here and there on these maps, which suggest, you know, areas that are available for agriculture that aren't being currently used. What there is there's a whole bunch of peasant farming. And one of the main ways that the peasants farm in that area is through shifting cultivation. So you will leave certain parts of the land fallow, and then you shift around, your crop production around. And they tend to be managed by the communities. You know, it's not like there's private ownership of the plots, but there's land management that happens at the community level. And you decide who's going to farm where, and that can change from year to year. And in that area already, you have a whole bunch of investors who are coming in, companies essentially, coming in, trying to acquire land in that area. So beyond just what you have at the ProSavanna project, you have all kinds of companies that are interested in grabbing land in that area as quickly as they can, because they understand that there is this interest from outside actors, from outside forces, whether it's the Japanese or the Chinese or whether it's UK private equity firms who want to get control of that land. So it is becoming a bit of a premium. And you have companies that are moving in to try to grab land already. When I was in that area in July, we met with one community, the community of Namisa, which is just outside of the capital, Nampula, which is the capital city of Nampula province. It's one of the main provinces being targeted. It's where the Nacala port is as well. And this community, which had absolutely zero knowledge about the ProSavanna project, it was the first time they'd ever heard any talk of it was when we were there. They would say without a doubt that there is a zero land available, that all the land is being used in that area. They're also very keen to have people buy their crops. So their first response to this was, well, if these people are interested in having more soybeans and maize, why don't they buy from us? We can easily grow this stuff. So they have no knowledge of this project. They're in this area that's being targeted. And in the middle of our meeting, somebody pulls out a document and says, how can we fight against this? Because, look, we already have this company that came here 2 weeks ago, held some kind of a sort of consultation meeting, in quotations, and informed us that they were taking 126,000 hectares in the region for a eucalyptus project. So on top of the 14 million hectares being targeted by these Brazilian farming outfits and by the Japanese and this ProSavanna project, you have projects such as this one. This was, in this case, a Norwegian company, which is already moving into these communities and taking away their lands without any consultation, without any real form of, without these communities having any real say.
Is the government involved in that? I mean, who owns that land? I mean, well, is communally owned land? Are there title deeds?
Oh, yeah, I mean, ownership for most of Africa is not, you can't even raise the question of ownership. These are lands that communities themselves don't see it that way. They say that these are our lands, and they recognize that they have authority over those lands, that they have control over those lands. But when it comes down to any kind of legal documents, the legal power is generally vested in the government. So the state, and usually it's the president, is actually the owner of those lands, if you want to look at it that way. And so the state has the authority to sell off those lands to foreign investors. Except, in many countries, the land legislation will say that communities have control over their lands, and that there are processes you have to go through in order to acquire those lands from the communities. How those are respected is a totally different matter. What kind of loopholes that people jump through, what kind of ways that communities, their lands are actually stolen from under their feet through various tricks. I mean, these things happen all the time. But in essence, in the legislation in Mozambique is in that way, it gives the communities, theoretically, it would give them strong control over their own lands. But in practice, that's just not what's happening.